This Misadventurous podcast is all about sharing wisdom on that adventure, on that life's journey we call an adventure. And this episode is a two-parter. I'm speaking with Sean Michael, a Kiwi-born, very inspirational guy who lives with faith in his life. And we talk all about dreams, desires, and what it's like to actually have the voice of God in your head. It's a very, very interesting chat and very down to earth, which is a really, really interesting observation from my own beliefs and understanding. And that's why I wanted to bring it to you now. Your adventurous life begins the moment you step out of your comfort zone. And that's why I started the Misadventurous podcast. I'm Tiffany Rouge, and I'm all about personal growth, changing through setbacks, standing strong in the face of injustice, and defining your own worth. I'm your host, and I'm connecting you with knowledge, voices, and stories of success. Women who have channeled their inner lady boss, business leaders, spirituality, and connection so that you can enjoy your life, make some serious bank, and live the life that you choose. Just a quick thing before all of the wisdom. I want to thank you for being a Misadventurous podcast listener. Whether you've listened to one or all of the episodes I've made for you, seriously, you rock. Did you know that I have another podcast called the Sound Growth Podcast? It's with my business coach, Ron Lal, and we talk all things mindset, thought design, and business development. So check it out if you're an entrepreneur, startup, or if you're looking to grow your business. Just search for the Sound Growth Podcast, however you're listening to this right now. And if you've ever thought about delving into the podcast realm yourself, I'm your girl. I make podcasts for people just like you. Whether you need help getting started, you have an idea and a mic, or you want someone to do the whole thing for you, get yourself onto www.sanctuarymedia.co. That's www.sanctuarymedia.co. That's where you can learn lots of amazing things about podcasting and get in touch with me to figure out how I can help you share your message with the world. Tell me, to start off with, you studied video and video games, and now what is it that you currently do?
So currently I am working for a cleaning company, and I do the technical work for them. Do a bit of managing a CRM system and responsible for making sure bugs get fixed and just other general technical issues that come up, like setting up like computers and all that kind of thing.
And is that something like, did you grow up setting up tech? Like, have you just always been in that tech sphere?
Not at all. I've always been interested in technology, I suppose, at some level, but no more than your average, 1990s kid. You know, I was into video game consoles and television and computers. I remember, I think it was either late 2006, early 2007, when YouTube wasn't really a big thing, but it was just sort of becoming what we know it to be today. And I was watching stuff on there. So I was always involved with technology in that way, but not from like a programming point of view, or I wasn't mucking around with computers in that way. I was just using them like everyone else would have as someone growing up in the 1990s with the internet.
So. Yeah. And how did it happen then? How did you find yourself being the tech guy for a cleaning company?
Yeah. How did that happen? Well, I was studying video game development at the time, and yeah. I suppose a bit of what I was doing when I was doing video work is a lot of the, I guess, the process for making video today is technical. So even when it was film, it was technical, but it was a different kind of technical. Whereas with digital, there's a lot of computer technology involved. And so I got into computers then, and I kind of accidentally got into game making. So I discovered a program which I sort of toyed around with, and that sort of led to wanting to know more about programming. And I'd probably say that my filmmaking degree was the first time it really got into technical in a big way. I mean, I'd played around with like video cameras before, but like really getting into the computer and like, I guess how that worked. Even at school, I was always into math and science, but not necessarily the technology side. And that really grew out of, yeah, studying filmmaking, I would argue. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Where did you study?
I studied at the Southern Institute of Technology, okay. Which is in Invercargill in New Zealand.
Right. What were you hoping to get out of your degree when you started study versus what you got out of your degree?
I guess I went in naively.
I feel like everyone does when you start a degree, like, oh, it's going to be awesome. I have this idea of what it's going to be. And then what happened?
Yeah. I think I was interested in YouTube and the video making space. Like, there was something that I think, yeah, like there was, as I said, in the very early days, I sort of was watching stuff and then went away from it for a bit and then it came back again in a big way. Mm-hmm. I was always interested in like science and technology, and in my last year of high school, sort of almost out of character, I decided I wanted to study drama and media studies. And I think that really led me on this path of wanting to do creative content. And when I was looking at studying filmmaking, I wanted something that would help me, I guess, do something like YouTube. You know, like I was seeing these people doing creative like skits and things like that, and that's what I wanted to do. And I was looking for something that would give me the experience and the tools to do that. However, I didn't really consider that the course was leading very much in a different direction. Like, it did equip me to do that, but it was more interested in feature filmmaking. That was the focus of the course. And so a lot of what I learnt is more applicable to short films as opposed to that sort of like skit-like content. It was more focused on the technical side of making film rather than necessarily writing or like those kind of things. We did do writing stuff. It's just it was more focused on filming and directing and those kind of elements of video or filmmaking.
Yeah. And with that, do you make videos today?
I do not. It's something that I've sort of thought about time and time again, being like, is this something I want to get back into, you know? Especially because YouTube, that kind of format that it pioneered, the barrier to entry is really low, you know? Like, it definitely helps to have good technology, you know, to have a good mic or camera, but it's actually not necessary to start. And if you wanted to make it a business, which is, I guess, a different question, but then, yeah, okay, you maybe need a little bit more investment behind you, a little bit more technology that's considered professional or whatever.
But all that sort of stuff can be developed. Like, as you're developing as a filmmaker, as a blogger, as a YouTuber, you can develop all those systems and the kind of things where you would go and you make do with what you got, and then you just upgrade when you have the chance or when you come across that sort of opportunity. What happened to – actually, let me change the question. Did you enjoy filmmaking?
Yes, but I didn't enjoy it enough. Mm-hmm. So, like, I interned on Pete's Dragon.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a really cool experience. I was part of the advanced production crew, which I'm sure – almost no one knows what that is, but it's responsible for, I guess, setting up for the production crew. So there was a lot of establishing spaces, scouting out locations that the production crew could set up in. Not necessarily creative work, but still very enjoyable production work. And I really enjoyed that experience. I was on there for about 4 or 5 days, I think over a couple of weeks. But it did highlight to me that these long days and the commitment required to really work in that space is huge. You know, it's not uncommon to do 11, 12-hour days, 5 days a week. Maybe you're doing that for 6 weeks at a time for your standard feature film.
Wow.
If it's like an action-based film, it might be 3 months. That's a long time where you're probably going to be away from your family, because generally speaking, films are shot in locations that aren't right next door to your house.
Yeah.
So it was something that I'd always been thinking about, but I think weighing up how much I enjoyed it versus how much I'd have to give up, it was just too much for me.
Mm.
And that was the real sort of moment where I went, yeah, this isn't for me.
So, right, okay. And so what is for you? What's important to you?
Family is a big one. So the last year or so, I've been really trying to focus on that. And a lot of my disposable income has been going towards, you know, getting plane tickets to go back to Christchurch, which was where I was born and where my mum and dad and my siblings live.
Right.
And I had a brother studying in Dunedin who has just recently moved back to Christchurch as well. So I'm hoping to make that even more a focus this year.
Would the plan eventually be to move back there, or are you okay with the amount of distance because you have other things going on?
It's a question that I'm still figuring out. It doesn't make much sense in my mind to move back to Christchurch. Like, now in some ways would be the best time. As you said, like, everyone from my immediate family is in Christchurch now, and that may not be the case in a year's time.
Mm.
However, I guess I would put it this way. I get a sense that that is not the right thing to do, even though I'm, you know, I'm trying to, I guess, make a career in game development, and that wouldn't necessarily go on hold in Christchurch. There's actually a lot of interesting game dev stuff going on in Christchurch at the moment. But it's just, yeah, it's hard to explain other than that I've thought about it and there's just something not quite right about it. And I just get that sense.
Fair enough. You know, it takes a lot to try and, or to listen to that intuition and to go, it's not right for me, you know, don't push, like actually hear that little voice and sit with it and be okay with it. So good on you.
Yeah, thank you.
No worries. What about this game dev stuff? So is this where your passion lies?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. It's a two-pronged thing in that it's something that's grown in me, you know. When I was at school, there were other people that were interested in game dev. They were like, I'm going to make games. And ironically, they're not making games at the moment. You know, I guess that's what happens, is that you start out with these naive visions of, you know, I want to do this. I want to be a doctor or whatever else. But no one tells you that to be a doctor, you're looking at probably 10 years of training. There's a lot of that kind of thing that goes
on. It's the reality of the dream. And I went through it. You know, I wanted to be a radio announcer, but I spent 7 years interning unpaid, in the same sense where it was long days for nothing. And no one, you're right, no one tells you that that's what you have to do to get there.
And I think the real crime of some of that stuff is that, like, you know, pursue your dreams, yeah, but, and I think it's starting to happen now, especially as what it means to be an employee, what it means to be an employer, what it means to sort of have a job in the 21st century is very different to what it was in the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're starting to see this, you know, people finding new ways to do business, new ways to make a living. And being okay with, I think, making a little bit less than what they would have in a traditional 20th century job market. I think, like, we're starting to, instead of go just chase your dream, be like, hey, yeah, you know, like, it's great that you want to do this thing. Make sure you have a way to pay the bills. Make sure that, you know, like, don't give up everything for a dream. Just make sure that you actually want it and do it in a sustainable way rather than an unsustainable way.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's part of why I am doing IT at a cleaning company, is that I'm trying to find a sustainable way to pursue a game dev career, you know. One of the options I'm considering is, do I want to work for a studio, which in some ways limits what I can do creatively outside of that, especially from a money standpoint, you know, like, it's considered direct competition if I make a game and I'm also working for a studio making a game, which makes sense, you know. It'd be like, unless you had it strictly stated in your contract that you were doing that, you know, I can understand why they wouldn't want that.
It makes sense as well. Like, if there was any sort of similarity between games and one of them took off, say you got to sell that game to a different studio for millions, they would clearly want some. Like, it's a huge conflict of interest.
Definitely. And it's one of those things where I'm in a really good position because I work part-time for the foreseeable future that's sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
But there is also a cost associated with that, where I am in some sense capping my potential earnings of the future. And so that means whatever I'm doing now has to make that worth it. It's not all about money, but it is an awareness that by making this decision, I am capping earning potential. And am I okay with that? Is this pursuit of this dream worth it? In my opinion, yeah, right now it is, you know. It might not be in a year, you know, like that's all stuff for me to figure out on the journey.
Mm-hmm. Fair. I love that. And you seem quite mentally aware of all of that. Like there's a confidence in that. How did that happen? You know, it seems like you know what you're doing.
Yeah, I think it's always an illusion to say that you know exactly what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. No one has their shit together.
Not truly. Yeah, no. We're going to all pretend. However, I think, to be honest, it's very faith-driven. You know, like I believe in a God who is very interested in my life. He cares about what I do, and I honestly believe he's led me on this journey. You know, I don't think it's an accident that when I was studying film that I encountered this game-making thing that I really enjoyed. Something I suppose I haven't already talked about is that I had a very sort of, I mentioned math and science, but it was like a huge interest for me. And game making is this perfect sort of in between of art and math, because everything related to computers is math, but somehow you have to take that math and turn it into something beautiful and, you know, compelling or, you know, some sort of artistic expression in some way.
That's where the creativity comes into it.
Yeah, and I love that, you know, that this thing that seems to a lot of people very soulless, you know, like maths is seen as this kind of system or process that, you know, you put one thing in, something comes out. And I know that a lot of high-level mathematicians don't see it that way, but a lot of people do. And I love how that creates this space, you know, like computers is this beautiful space where you can do almost anything if you know what you want to do and you can learn a bit about how the tool works. You know, you can create almost anything.
Mm. And so bringing it back to your faith, and I think it's really important that faith is a big thing in anyone's life, regardless of what you actually believe in, to believe that you are kind of going there and that essentially someone has your back or something has your back, I think is really powerful. And is that something that you've grown up with?
Yeah. So I grew up in a Christian household, and that did have a huge influence on my perspectives. And I'm very grateful for that, because I know that a lot of what I take for granted today is due to growing up in that space, growing up in, you know, with two parents who are still together, which a lot of people, you know, like that's something that for a long time I took for granted. A lot of people don't have that, and it has a huge effect. And I've seen friends who went from, you know, hugely confident to incredibly compromised confidence because of a breakup of parents, something as simple as that. You know, I thank God for that. And while I obviously grew up in that home, and people would say, I guess that maybe that's why I believe what I believe, I know that I've been on a journey of exploring this. You know, it's not my faith is not my parents' faith. It's very, very different. The way I see God at work and what I believe God is doing is not exactly opposed to what they believe, but it has taken on its own expression. It's not just the expression of my parents that I'm parroting since I was a child.
Mm-hmm. How did they take that? Are they aware of that?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're, they've definitely said that they're proud of me. And I think that part of that is that I know my God, and that, that is sort of what it's grown out, you know? Maybe I've suggested that it's quite different. It's not like it's hugely different. It's just taken on its own expression. It's probably the best way to describe it.
I think it's all relativity, isn't it? It's what the context that you're building around it. So I think everybody has a general understanding of what Christianity is, but is it the difference in the way that you apply it to your life kind of thing, or?
Christianity is interesting because at its core, it really should be about Jesus Christ and what he did by dying on the cross. I think a lot of people have a sort of broader understanding of what that is than that sort of core fundamental. And a lot of it has to do with human things that have maybe distorted a bit of what God would have intended. Organized religion is very important, but I think Christianity has taken on some of those traditions that aren't necessarily core to what it is to be Christian. And so some people take that on board and think of it that way. For me, the most fundamental important thing is that Jesus, came to free us from our sin. And sin, I guess, it's defined in many ways, but one really good way of thinking about it is missing the mark. And what I like about that definition is that quite often we make decisions that make the world worse. And whether it's because, you know, I decide I want to have a full meal tonight and someone else can starve, you know, or something like that. We make these decisions that ultimately make the world a worse place. And at its core, that's really what sin's about. It's not about anything more than that, that when we make decisions that say, I'm more important than that other person, or, you know, what I want is fundamentally more important than what you need. You know, those kind of things is really, in a broad sense, what sin is. And so I think for me, it's been really interesting to see that, like, I make all these unhealthy decisions because of either, you know, a flawed understanding of who I am and thinking that I need this thing when I really don't, or I guess the sin of other people and how that's affected me, you know, like when they've, you know, like I think bullying's a classic example of, and you see how infectious that is and how it makes the world an incredibly worse place, like generationally, you know. And there's so many things you can look at and be like, man, if there was just forgiveness and freedom from that thing that happened, you know, when someone made a decision to make the world worse. How much better a place the world would be if we could be free from all that. And that's, to me, that's what Jesus, you know, died for, is that we would not make decisions that make the world a worse place for us and our community, but actually make it better, and that we're able to sacrifice things that we want or whatever so that we can make our communities a better place.
Okay. So it's more so about the outward, just making the space around us better.
There is this part of it where it is relational as well, which I failed to mention, that I have this relationship with God, and in this process he shows me things that, you know, make my life worse and make other people's lives worse. And so there is this relational aspect of where that's really important to what it is to be a Christian. But the fruit of that, if you like, or the consequences of having this relationship and God, you know, God and I having a dialogue, the consequences of that is making community better. Is because as the outworks, as, you know, I'm trying to avoid using language that maybe misrepresents it, but I think as we are purified, if we were to use, like, you know, language, or sanctified, to use what we call Christianese, which, because not everyone knows what that means, but I guess as God works on us, our communities are ultimately made better because, you know, we are better people and able to choose to do things that make our communities better.
Right.
And it's just sort of the outworking of this relationship rather than a striving to achieve that, if that kind of makes sense.
Right. Yeah, no, I understand that. I think in terms of, you know, it is relative to, like, my beliefs is I'm agnostic. I don't like giving a name and, you know, saying God, but I know that there is a power out there that has my back. And I think it's so similar with the idea that by being a better person in yourself, you are then helping the world become a better place. Is that kind of the general consensus?
I agree, it's similar, and it's like, if you're looking from the outside in, and you just see the outside. I agree, it's very similar. I think what I think is different about a faith where you have a personal God with a name is that, you know, there's a personage to it. You know, like you talked about a power. And I think this is really common. We see this a lot, like just to take a popular public reference, you know, obviously Star Wars is big at the moment, just released their last movie. The whole idea of the Force, I think that's quite often how people think about, you know, or the universe is another term that quite often gets used. What I personally dislike about that is that there is a person behind that. It's not just a... like, yeah, it's not just a force. It's not just a power. It's not just, there's a person with like feelings and, you know, emotion and wants to have a conversation, you know? And I think so often when we think about it as a force, when we think about it as a power, we rob the personhood of that. We actually even see it in Christianity really often. People talk about the Holy Spirit. And the Holy Spirit is quite often thought of as like, you know, the power or the force, because in Christian theology, that's often how God does his work, is that the Holy Spirit comes and, you know, by his grace does things. But there's a person behind that. It's not just a force, you know. It's like the Holy Spirit is a person, you know. There's a spirit there. It's not just it's not the holy force. It's not does that kind of make sense? Like it's different for me?
I understand that, like it's something that you see it, like you're personifying these powers. I find it really interesting because it's a long time since I've heard anyone sort of speak like that, because I grew up Mormon, and that's very similar to the kind of language and the sort of stuff that I was used to hearing when I was growing up. How do you fare when you have your faith in your religion? Are you one to kind of want to convert others, or do you sort of, what's your take on the fact that, like, you know, people are going to believe whatever they're going to believe?
You've said it very well there. People believe what they want to believe. It doesn't matter. It's been a big part of my journey. Like, do I think that it's important to demonstrate truth when necessary? Yeah. But it's an understanding that truth actually doesn't, you know, like facts are not going to change a person's mind. Like, people believe what they want to believe for very intrinsic reasons. It's not usually the external facts that drive that. I think facts are important because as soon as some of those intrinsic reasons change, then they're open to understanding things in a different way. That's where I think like misinformation can often drive them in the wrong direction.
Also like coming from personal experience as well. You know, people believe certain things because things have happened to them, and they recognize that if I do that, this, you know, X event is going to happen. You know, it's the same sort of presumption that when I flick a light switch on, I'm going to believe that the lights will turn on. You know, it's based on the experiences that I've had going into other rooms and flicking light switches on and the lights coming off. Like, there's a certain perception and an assumption that we make, because let's face it, you and I cannot prove that there is a man upstairs, that there is a Holy Spirit, that the universe has our back, right? Like, all of it is assumption and what we believe to be true, right? And I think it's really interesting because you're right, it's your belief, but everyone has their own beliefs that they've come to from, yeah, probably misinformation, but also like mainly from experience, you know, from the way they see the world.
I think there is elements of experience, but experience doesn't actually speak for itself. Often I don't think that, because you and I can experience the same effective thing, but either due to prior experience or knowledge or whatever else, we're going to interpret that differently.
Of course, yeah.
And I think that's a lot of what people see, you know, like for something happens to me, you know, like for example, this journey of heading towards game dev. Like I believe that's God, that God has led me there. There's a lot of things in my life where I believe that was God working. Other people would experience that exact same thing and rationalize it a totally different way. Coming, I guess, full circle is that people believe what they want to believe, but it's also important to put truth out there, because My belief is that God does the changing. You know, if God is, it says in the Bible that, you know, like Jesus is knocking on the door, and if anyone who lets him enter, he will come in. And I genuinely believe that that's how it works. You know, like sometimes I'm going to say things that might assist that process, but it's not because I said it. It's because God is working. And, you know, that's, I don't understand it. I don't, you know, but like, you know, I've gone through that process, I guess, of trying to convert, and I've seen that it's been unfruitful. But actually what has been fruitful is understanding that God works, and that sometimes he'll ask me to do something that I don't really understand.
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay, because it's not about the something, it's about what he's doing.
That's it. Part two of my chat with Sean will come out next week, so stick around for that. Well, that's almost it from me here on Miss Adventurous. If you dig what you hear and want to keep up to date with every single episode of the Miss Adventurous podcast, hit subscribe however you're listening to this right now. And if you want to be even more of a legend and help other wayward adventurers find this path, I'd love it if you head on over to iTunes and rate and review this podcast. Go on, 5 stars for all that positivity, right? So until next time, and don't forget, it's the small choices that we make every single day that build up to that big change that you're working towards. So stay with it.